From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 16th day of September. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel, discuss what's been happening in the soybean fundamentals with Todd Hubbs, and take a look at the weather forecast with Mark Russo. Oh, and the folks at the Andersons will be here to discuss the cash grain situation on this Monday afternoon. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, December corn today up 5 1/4, finished at $3.74. The March at $3.86, up 4 1/2, and May futures up 4 cents, $3.94 and a half a bushel. July corn 4 1 1/4, up 4 1/4, and next year's December, that's the 2020 futures at $4.10 3/4, up 4 cents. November soybeans a penny and a quarter, $9 even. They were up 1 1/4. That is January futures at $9.13 3/4, up 1 1/2, and March at $9.25 3/4, a penny and 3/4 higher. The May contract up 1 3/4 at $9.36 1/2, and July corn 2 1/2 cents higher at $9.45 1/2. The bean oil 85 cents higher at $30.14. The bean meal down $2.70 at $295.20. Wheat futures for the day, December contract, 5 1/4 cents higher at $4.88 3/4, and July of next year at $5.03, up 5 1/2. The harvest month for the hard red in the July at $4.42 1/2, 7 3/4 cents higher. Live cattle futures in the October, they finished $98 even, down 7 1/2 cents. December 35 cents lower at $104.2 1/2, and the February at $110.45, down 65. Feeder cattle up nickel at $136.55, October at $134.20, 37 1/2 lower, and lean hogs in the October down $2.85 at $63.62 1/2. A crude oil for the day up $7.61 at $62.45 a barrel. Ethanol futures 3 9/10 higher. The heating oil up 19 4/10 cents, and gasoline 19 cents higher. Natural gas up 6 6/10 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average off 111 points, and the U.S. dollar trading at 98.5. That's about 0.245 higher. The gold futures at $1,500.60, up $9.70. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, now joins us to discuss what's been happening in Chicago. Good Monday afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here. Thank you.
So we had lots of things going on over the weekend. Let's start with that, because crude oil jumped naturally on Sunday night after the drone attacks in Saudi Arabia took out, what, about 5% of the world's oil production. How did that filter into the grain and oil seeds and other trade for the day?
Well, Phil, that was a supportive undertone to that. We'll have more details here on how quick they can get some of those operations back in running again, but here you have Saudi Arabia spends billions and billions of dollars and has billions and billions of dollars to help for defense. And I think it was about 20 different drones came in and took out a pretty good chunk of the daily world supply of oil. So that's going to heighten up security issues and maybe reevaluate some defensive strategies. But I think that's about the biggest jump, highest jump we've seen since the Gulf War broke out back in the 90s there. So it's a concern. We'll see how long the gas lines are when I go home this afternoon here, see if there's still some gas stations that maybe have some good buys. But it should be supportive as a whole here to the whole commodity complex.
And what'd you make of the corn and soybean trade for the day?
Oh, I think it's encouraging to start out the week on a positive note, holding last week's gains. Last week was sort of a significant benchmark. We recorded some weekly price reversals to the upside, and we're kind of following through now. So that kind of puts the market in a position here to turn some of these momentum indicators to the upside. The key is, as long as we keep holding together here, we'll start turning the moving averages back up. And hopefully that would stimulate some of these commodity funds to come in and cover some short positions. When you look at their overall short positions of about 130,000, 120,000 corn contracts and about 50,000, 60,000 bean contracts, it sort of tells us that they're subject to some positive news for a change. On the bean futures, $9 is kind of a benchmark to watch here. That's 50% back up to the high we made at 9.49 back in June there. And on December corn futures, when you look at the retracement levels there and the gap we left after the August crop report, 3.88 seems to kind of be a benchmark to watch here as we move over the next week or two.
What do you think this afternoon's weekly crop progress reports will show?
Well, seasonally, we come in and start to see a little deterioration because of the crop maturing and shutting down. Corn conditions are expected to be 53 to 55% good to excellent. Last week, we were at 55%. This week, they're looking 54%, down 1%. Beans, same thing, we were 55%. Last week, we were at 54%. Percent this week. Corn harvest as a nation is expected to be about 4% complete. Early yields continue to be a little soft here in the eastern belt, anywhere from 20 bushels to 80, 90 bushels below last year's. It's still fairly early. Seems like a lot of producers we visit with might want to try to or wanting to get in here by mid to late week and kind of see what they're working with.
Well, the Chinese have been working with the Trump administration. It looks like there are quite a few buys on the books through last week. What do you think of those?
Well, yeah, that was encouraging. I was at a 0% chance of anything happening on that, but that's real encouraging. The rumor was they bought about 600,000 tons total. Last week there. So far, they've confirmed about 460,000 tons. There's rumors as much as 1 to 2 million metric tons. And I think it was not a goodwill thing. I think it was just a necessary food security type of move to get on the books. When you start watching the Brazilian weather maps, it's their dry season now. They're relatively dry, but I think when they start to put all their eggs in the basket there, in the same basket, that they can't rely 100% on the southern hemisphere. And so I think they're wanting to gather some coverage here, since we were quite a bit cheaper than the southern hemisphere and have something to work with, at least going into the January, February, March time window.
Anything on the livestock before I let you go?
Well, spread activity more than anything. We got plenty of hogs around. And if we do see some Asian business come to the pork complex, it's going to be later on, probably after the first year, next spring. And so that's where most of the strength is going to remain, as they anticipate China coming to the world market to kind of curb the food inflation they're starting to see in their pork sector. They struck quite a few deals with the southern hemisphere, but the magnitude of the volume they need, hopefully they'll still come to the U.S. for some needs.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Very good. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. He writes an article weekly for the Farm Doc Daily website. You can find it up online right now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Happens most each and every Monday. Hey, thanks so much for being with us this week. You write extensively about the soybean market, both the WASD figures and then, of course, just the fundamentals, really, of what that market's going to look like as we go through the harvest season. Where did you start?
Well, I was talking about, have soybean prices put in a low with a question mark, and I guess my answer is I think so. What we have to remember is while we saw stronger consumption at the end of this 18-19 marketing year with WASDE showing a 20 million bushel increase in crush and 45 million bushel increase in exports, we pull back a little bit. That huge rally we saw last week's basically due to, the softening of trade negotiations with China and the announcement that they're going to roll back tariffs. But there's still a lot of uncertainty on follow through and exactly what that's going to mean for soybean exports in 1920. If we think about how much soybeans China's taken from the U.S., last marking year, by my calculations, is down over 550 million bushels. And from two marking years ago, 17-18, it's down 800 plus million bushels. And we've made up for that in some other areas as we picked up some customers that Brazil normally satisfies. But the kind of numbers that China's talking about buying right now as a good faith gesture or whatever, however they're framing it, are small feed compared to what we need them to take to get us back to the export levels to support the prices we're used to since the onset of China's entry in the WTO. So I think there's a good reason to think crush will remain strong next marketing year, and exports will be about where they were this year in all probability unless we get a trade deal. So it really comes down to supply in a lot of ways, barring some kind of trade deal. USDA lowered the soybean yield by 0.6 bushels an acre. I think it can go lower. But to get us at 19-20 carry out, even at 400 million bushels, we probably need a yield below 45 at current consumption levels. And to get back down to 250, 300, we're talking low 40s yield. And even though we saw a lot of issues with the implied pod weight and lower pod counts, I think that might be a stretch in this year's crop to get that low. So I do think the market put in a low in early September, but a poor trade negotiation outcome could see us run back down. And so I think maybe you should think about selling some beans in these kind of rallies. And the wild card in all this is South American production. We've seen dryness in southern Brazil and Argentina, and I think it's much too early to start thinking about them shorting their crop yet. But if they did have production problems this year, I think we would see some kind of different dynamics in the soybean market through the winter.
Yeah, so we'll have to watch and see when they actually begin the planting process, especially in Brazil, because it's clearly has a dry season, which should be ending now, but has, at least I think, not yet ended.
I think there's going to be some moisture coming in the next couple of weeks. Now, will it be sufficient? We don't know, but it's worth monitoring because if they get off to late planting, it has implications for both soybeans and second crop corn.
Yeah, so what's the possibility that the Chinese, just looking at all of the soybeans that are available, and they usually at this point would be importing from South America, they'd be importing from the United States, but the available soybeans are, what if they're just saying, you know what, it's the time we normally would switch. We should maybe get some of those beans coming down the Mississippi River.
I'm sympathetic to that point of view. I'm a bit cynical on this lull in the trade negotiations as well. I think by the president pushing back the escalation of tariffs by 2 weeks, I think China may have used this opportunity to maybe relieve a pressure valve domestically, particularly in the pork area. You know, lower pork prices so they can import a bunch of pork and some beans and backfill. You know, I write about, you know, when you see the deals they've done with Argentina and Russia on meal imports, which is unprecedented because they normally crush their own, and the way they're really trying to ramp back up their hog production numbers, they look to me like someone who's digging in for the long term on a trade fight. And this was just an opportunity to maybe backfill and relieve some pressure. Because I, at this point, don't see a lot of desire for them to cave on the structural issues that the administration's pushing back on them for in this trade negotiation. I know I'd be happy to have a trade deal, but I'm not sure the administration can do the kind of deal they could have had 18 months ago and claim victory. And why did we go through all this if you're just going to do some mediocre
trade deal?
Right, so they
would just say, let's go back to the deal we had before we started the trade war.
Right, and what's the point? Right, so we'll see how the negotiations go in October. I don't want to be too cynical, but I have a feeling China maybe used this opportunity to relieve some domestic pressure on prices, but we'll see.
Yeah, so to clarify, China has said it's not going to impose tariffs on some agricultural products, and it has a fairly extensive list. Soybeans and pork are both included in those, and that would be through essentially this marketing year for crops, so through the fall of next year.
That's what they say now, and they weren't going to escalate the tariffs, is my understanding. So there's still tariffs there, and come in to what they normally do, right? And there's no guarantee they'll keep that in place through next September either. So I think there's a issue about follow through on all these. You know, if trade negotiations get rancorous in October, you could see it go right back to where it was before. So while I think, you know, we might have seen some lows in early September in soybean prices, and these kind of rallies on trade negotiations, or if we see rallies on South American weather issues, which could happen, I think those are opportunities to sell. The Holy Grail is a resolution to the trade war and problems in South America, but that's probably too much to hope for.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
That, of course, is Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. We'll turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Mark Russo is here with Risk Pulse out of Chicago. It's a beautiful day in my part of the world. Mark, a little bit warmer than you might expect. Can't call it an Indian summer because we haven't had a freeze yet, but maybe you can talk about those. I know there's been a lot of discussion as we get later into the season and the idea that the corn crop and the soybean crop are still pretty darn far behind.
Yeah, as we look out ahead from now through the end of the month here, Todd, we just don't see any sign of a freeze in the Midwest, or even for that matter, anywhere close over the next couple of weeks. Over the next 12 days in particular, temperatures unseasonably warm. I'm talking about double-digit warmth, so that'll equate to, from an anomaly standpoint, and that equates to highs in the 80s, even a few lower 90s, minimum temperatures in the 60s, even some low 70s and some of the kind of the muggiest of mornings. There's going to be a little cool front here coming through late next week, but again, that's not going to do much to really cool down temperatures. And right at the end of the month, could get back to more kind of seasonal levels, but even there, it will not be cold enough to generate any kind of issues here. So we got a ways to go. Early October would be that next opportunity. If there's going to be a freezing temperatures, it would be at that time.
Any rainfall in the forecast? And can you kind of go through the rainfall that we've had over the past several days or so?
Yeah, certainly in recent days, we've had some clusters of heavy rainfall. These storm complexes have developed primarily from areas of like northeast Nebraska, over across Iowa, here into northern Illinois. In fact, much of the northern third or so of Illinois received heavy rainfall over the weekend, with totals ranging from 1 to 3 inches, even some localized heavier amounts. As we look ahead over the next couple of weeks, from now through Friday into Saturday, you know, relatively quiet or dry across much of the belt, a little bit of scattered activity out west in areas of Nebraska and Iowa. But for here in Illinois and adjacent areas of Indiana, the next main opportunity for rain is coming up this upcoming weekend into the early part of next week. So about a week from now, it doesn't look like that widespread or heavy of an event, but in general, totals look to range from half to about an inch. And then after that, several more days of drier weather before another kind of minor opportunity.
Has the dry season ended yet in Brazil?
It hasn't quite yet, Todd, and it's again during the second half of September that we begin to see the gradual ramping up of daily shower and thunderstorm development across Mato Grosso. And from a computer model guidance, there are indications that we're going to begin to see some of that increase in activity, but more importantly is actually some of the heat that's going on right now. We think that that's a good signal for these rains eventually moving in or setting up across Mato Grosso and adjacent areas there in the center-west Brazil. So bottom line, we don't see any red flags in Brazil at this time. Still with some dryness also in southern Brazil, but They are in a pattern of improvement over the next couple of weeks. It's actually Argentina where we currently have a bit more concern for continued dryness, as they've had a very dry past 30 days, and there's no indication of any significant rainfall over the next 14, 15 days.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us.
Yeah, my pleasure, Todd.
That is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Let's turn our attention now to what's been happening in the cash grain market. We're joined by Greg Johnson. He is at the Andersons. Hey, good afternoon to you, Greg. Thanks for being with us. You don't have anybody going today, do you?
Actually, we have one or two people just starting today. So most of the corn is still very wet, but there's some that has maybe got planted a little earlier and is drying down a little quicker. Maybe it's a earlier maturity number. I'm not exactly sure, but whatever the case, we do have a couple guys that that are starting.
With all the green corn and green soybeans around, I suppose that, you know, it's been dry in this area, so I guess things are coming along. So apparently that is the case. What's basis like in our area?
Basis is still very firm on corn. We've still got, as you just alluded to, 2 to 3 weeks before a lot of corn starts rolling, and end users, processors need corn. They thought they would have corn by the middle of September. Most years we do, but this year it may be more October 1, October 10. So basis seems to be hanging in there a little bit longer than usual, but eventually once we get into harvest, if the yields are not total disasters, then we may expect basis levels to weaken just a little bit in corn. And bean basis all depends upon whether we can work out a trade deal with China, because if we don't have an export market in the fall, it doesn't really matter how big or small the crop is for soybeans. Without an export program, the processors don't need all those beans in October, and so bean basis could be on the weakish side unless we get a trade deal worked out sooner rather than later.
Now, what's your fall basis and what's your January delivery basis?
Fall basis is 5 over December. That's historically very strong. Typically, we're about 15 to 20 under in the fall, but this year we're 5 over due to the short crop. And for January basis, we're 5 over the March, which is about a 12-cent better basis than what we're paying for fall. So it does pay to store corn, but not as we've seen in the past years, not a big carry compared to past years. For soybeans, 40 under November, which again historically is wider, weaker than usual, but again with no export program to speak of, that's why we're as weak as we are. And then for January, 40 under the January, so about a 15-cent improvement in basis there in the carry. So there is some carry in the market, but you know, not as much as in some years.
Should producers consider a basis contract?
I think so. It depends on, you know, they're going to compare it to the DP rate. They're not going to sell it at these prices. So the only question is, do you put it on a basis contract or do you pay the DP charges? And so farmers will go through that calculation and say, okay, it's going to cost me X, you know, let's say 20 cents to and pay DP charges till the first of the year, or I can put on a basis contract and not pay any DP charges, but I am going to give up the basis improvement. So how much do I think the basis is going to improve versus how much do I want to pay in DP charges? That's the calculation they'll go through. And at 5 over December, you know, if we were 20 under, and, you know, typically we're option priced the March, so, you know, with a 10-cent spread and a 20-cent basis, that's 30 cents in basis improvement and cash basis improvement. You know, and the DP charges are only 20 cents to the first of the year. Most people pay the 20 cents in DP and pick up 30 cents in basis. But this year, you know, the basis may only improve 10 cents, 15 cents, and you're paying, you know, more than that in DP charges. So this year, basis may be the way to go.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report.